The real estate market is booming. Whether you look in the suburbs or the city, Chicago continues to expand, creating incredible opportunities for those in the know. We'll connect with Chicago's real estate moguls to bring you the wisdom and expertise to help make your next real estate move a lucrative one on the Real Estate Moguls Podcast.
How you guys doing? I'm Tony Arce. Welcome to the Real Estate Moguls Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Sherry Jordan, real estate broker and owner at Suite 527 Realty Group. Sherry, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, I got to say, right off the bat, I wasn't sure if we were doing the real estate podcast or the fashion podcast, because you came in looking sharp.
Well, thank you.
And I know you said, how should I dress? I said to your brand. So, you know, kudos on that selection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Brand.
And you nailed it. And speaking of brand, you know, let's get into the personal brand of who Sherry Jordan is, right? Originally from Chicago, Southside girl.
Born and raised, Inglewood.
And what was, I guess, identifying being from Chicago, what was it like growing up here? And to the extent that it made you want to get involved in real estate and stay in Chicago?
Well, I've been through different phases, different neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So I would say it changed just like any other person growing up wherever they are. Growing up in Inglewood, I would say it was different than what we see portrayed in the media. I grew up in Inglewood where it was very pretty. Grass was, mm-hmm. was green, you know, and the neighborhood was a village. Everybody looked out for one another. It was community, you know, family. That's the Inglewood that I grew up in, you know, which is why I try to go back and help serve the area too. So the people, the residents of Inglewood today can see what I saw growing up, right? When I was about 11, 12, we moved closer to 79th Street in the Auburn Gresham area. It was a little different. Mm. Although, you know, we weren't in Inglewood. So in our minds at that time, it was kind of a step up, sort of state, you know, sort of speak. But the feeling was not the same.
Interesting.
The feeling was not the same. I was in fifth, sixth grade at the time. So I'm making new friends. You know what you're supposed to do as a kid, but it was not the same sense of community that was left for me in Inglewood. Going to high school, and that's when my mother purchased her first home. I was already 15 years old, and I am the baby of eight children.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. So to see my mom raise seven of my siblings in apartments, and none of them seeing what home life was like until they were grown and gone and purchased their own. I got to see that at 15. And that is what sparked a difference in home ownership for me. Mm. Is, you know, in our community, most of us don't own at all. And if we do, it's so much later in life that's where we're lacking teaching the next generation of how important home ownership is. So I wanted to change that and do that earlier.
And not only did you go through home ownership, but you actually went through the process of becoming a homeowner, right? You got to see that at 15, you're old enough at least to have an impact on you, to kind of remember some of those things and just be involved to where that's something that you don't get to see if you were just born into it, or, you know, maybe after, right? Like your parents when you're older, but you got to be there when it all happened.
Right. I got to be there. My siblings did not.
Right.
So when they actually, my oldest sister was the first of my siblings that did purchase a home. And that was because my brother-in-law, who was, I think they were dating at the time, but he already had a sense of home ownership. Mm. He and his mother lived in a family building, of which his mother owned. So when they got married, my sister moved with her husband in the family building. And then from there, she said, okay, I want a home for me and my children. So when they start having my nephews, it was important to her to raise them in a house. But she saw that sense of home ownership mm-hmm. from her husband and not my mom, you know. So I just wanted to try to change that trajectory. Just like, I want my children to learn about home ownership from me.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And as you have this very, I guess, unique perspective that a lot of people don't get to have, where, you know, you grew up in this environment with your siblings, you kind of get to see them almost like a case study, right, of what it's like not to have grown up in that, and then to meet someone like your sister did, her husband being already having that on the forefront of his mind, home ownership. What, I guess, can you kind of assess from that, also from your own community, that the impact that home ownership has early on, right, for parents to start thinking about that, for even if you're not married, right, if you have aspirations of that one day, that you should start thinking about that now before you're in that moment, right? But that the impact that it has on the kids, on the individuals, of the other parents, you got to kind of see all different aspects of that, right?
Yes, and it was very eye-opening for me to see that from different perspectives. Because, again, that was my oldest sister. Mm-hmm. So being that it is eight of us, I was with her a lot. So I was with her at grandma's house. When she moved with her husband, I would stay, you know, over there with her. She was the babysitter. She was second mom, right? So seeing that from both perspectives, it set an example, you know, for me. And I know that my mom, she would have become a homeowner before if she was taught that, but she never did. So she just we had the nicest apartments on the block. I could tell you that, you know. So it's not that we were missing out, but it was, Mom, you work hard. You when we wake up, our money for school is laid out on the dresser because you're already gone. And we are seeing you at night when it's time for dinner. But we don't own anything.
Mm.
You're just, yes, you're taking care of us and you're taking very good care of us. But, you know, Lord forbid you're gone, we have nothing. And those are things we don't think about because they're not put into perspective for us, you know. So where do we start, where and when do we start to make that change, you know?
What advice would you give people to start thinking about it, especially when it's not something that they're necessarily surrounded by? Because a lot of people don't have that experience, right? They end up graduating from high school, living in an apartment and not having that experience of home ownership. But obviously it's important and it's available to everybody. That's the thing, is it's not as difficult as people think it is. And with the right advice early on, right? How do you translate that into some advice that people can take practically and apply it to their lives, especially young people when they're starting off with their credit and, you know, establishing themselves, how to start thinking about real estate?
Well, I think that is the responsibility of the professionals, okay? First of all, when we're looking at our clients at not just a transaction and we're looking at them as clients, you have to have a passion if you really want to sustain in the real estate industry. We're going to have broke days. We're going to have economic downturns. It's going to be a emotional roller coaster. This is, it's not for the weak, right? You know, I know social media has made it seem prim and proper, like very cute and flashy, but it's not, right? We have to roll our sleeves up and we have to get out there. But I will say that begins with us, because we know that in the Black and brown communities, this is not talked about a lot. And most of us are not. It's kind of like the 1% that does have fathers or grandparents that taught them this or pass property down to them, you know, when they left us here on this earth. But most of us don't have that. So if this is truly what your passion is, and it's not just about a check, how about we educate? And that's where it will start. And it's as far as the adults, it's starting to educate them. Instead of just saying the trendy, let's build generational wealth, let's teach them how to build generational wealth. And we do know that that is within real estate. That's one way. Another way is, how about instead of just going straight for the adults that are ready, how about let's start with the children that are not? And we can help foster that mindset so that they are growing and they're already thinking about this. One of the organizations that I'm with is YRD Chicago, which is the Young Realtors Division of our Chicago chapter is Dearborn, but our national is NARAB. And what we focus on is making sure that we let the youth know that home ownership matters. Black home ownership is even, you know, higher because we're still, you know, we are still in a very low numbers for Black home ownership, but we're teaching them young, and we are taking them through the process in summits and workshops and things of that nature to teach them about credit, about entrepreneurship, because we're in an entrepreneur world, about, you know, credit and different things that they can do to set themselves up for being investors or homeowners themselves when they are ready.
Which is amazing, by the way, because yeah. I think we live in such an instant gratification world that if you can't make a client out of someone when you first meet them, then it's not worth the investment, right? And there's that mentality, if I can't benefit from it now. But when you really see it as that, what you said, have the passion for it and also know that you're in it for the long haul, why wouldn't you do this?
Yes. Right? Yes. That's about the instant gratification. So it depends on what exactly are you doing it for? Because
very true.
That's absolutely gratifying to me.
Absolutely.
When I see the looks on those, the looks on these children's face when they light up and know, like, oh, so you mean I can? Or to hear their dreams, and their dreams is saying, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to have great credit. I want to invest in my community. I want to buy my mom a house before she leaves, because I see what she's, all the hard work that she's done for me. You know, when I hear the children, you know, say things like that, that's just as gratifying to me as closing day.
That's I love that. I mean, that's amazing. And what a way to just be inspired to go get up and get at it every day, right? What more do you need when you have something like that?
Yeah.
And it also comes from experience for you, because, you know, we were talking earlier just about some of those things in your travels and the way you perceive even cultures, right? And out of ignorance, not knowing any better, right? And we look at that as such a dirty word, but that it's also not always our fault. Ignorance is that of the community, as you're saying, right? And for you, getting into real estate, you purchased your own home at 28, right?
Yeah.
And it didn't go so well, right? A little bit of predatory lending involved?
Oh, yes. So if anyone has been around, you know, our age or even a little bit younger, they know that in 2008, like, our market crashed. Like, the real estate world changed as we knew it, right? Well, it didn't change as I knew it, because I didn't know it yet.
Like, this is all you knew.
I was like, this is all I know. Yeah. So in about 2007-ish, I was 28 years old. I was living in it was my mom's house. She had remarried after her first husband passed. And so they moved on into their marital home. My mom wasn't necessarily ready to give up her home yet. That's her baby. She still had that sentimental attachment. So myself, with my two boys, my sister and my nephew, and one of my brothers, we all moved into mom's house to keep it, right? Mm. After a while, I said, you know, Mom, you know, I don't want to just leave your house, but I'm ready to purchase my own. I want my boys to grow up, and I love my siblings, but I want my own, you know. So she said, okay, I think I'm finally ready to let go. So why don't you consider purchasing my house? I said, okay. As a way to help me, as a means to help me, she only was interested in selling me the home for the balance that she owed on a loan, okay? And I didn't have an agent, and I'm purchasing my mom's house, so I did not know that I needed an agent. I just went to a person that I knew and I trusted, and that did mortgages. So the information that I was given was that I was not able to purchase the home for the balance of my mom's mortgage. I had to purchase it for the appraised value.
Oh,
Now, for those that were not in real estate back then, the appraisers were not contracted by the banks, by the lenders. A buyer chose their own appraiser. And that was one of the things that contributed to the market crash, because they were just putting numbers on paper, right? And I was also given this referral for an appraiser through this lender. And I'm not asking a lot of questions, because I will tell you right now, Tony, I call myself a toddler when it comes to questions, because I ask, but why? But why? But what I asked that over and over until I fully understand. I did not ask, but why? Because I fully trusted this person, right? So the appraised value came back well over, like just short of $100,000, more than what my mom owed on the home. And because I had great credit and because I had a really good job, back then you can even state your income and just sign a paper pretty much, say I can afford this home.
Yeah,
yes. Really. So I went into that completely blindsided, and I was just happy to be the youngest homeowner in my family and just to start a trend that I, you know, hope to see for my family to come. And a year later, the market crash, and everything in business is affected by it, you know, similar to what we've been seeing in this past year. So I worked for Hostess Brands. So they went into bankruptcy, not once, not twice, like right behind each other.
Mm-hmm.
Hours cut, overtime cut. We were even, they had a stipend on our checks that we were helping paying back the bankruptcy court. And, well, we were not paying for health benefits before this. We now have to also pay for health benefits. So my paychecks cut by more than 50%. I was not able to get a modification because they told me, well, you've never missed a mortgage payment, so it doesn't look like you're struggling. Wow. I fought for that home for 2 years, and I was tired. I finally let go. And that was a blow to me, because I not only lost my first home, I lost my mom's first home.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a long time to get past that. That it left a huge void, you know, and I had to just go and just start my life over again. And it's just something that I didn't want to see anybody else go through. So when I decided to, well, Hostess helped that when they went into bankruptcy, I was like, I have to find another means to make a living, but I want to do it where I'm also helping people avoid what I went through. I want to educate people that are purchasing homes. So I went out with my real estate license. And
because you got a license just because you wanted to learn too, right? It wasn't even like you had intended for that.
That was that toddler.
Yeah, yeah.
That was that toddler. I wanted to just be a real estate investor.
Yeah, okay.
I had no desire of being an agent. And although you did not need a license, you still don't, to be an investor, I just wanted to be able to sit at the table and know what you were talking about. So because I was interested in, that was a hobby for me. Like on my vacation, I took the real estate class.
Mm.
That was my vacation. So I did not.
Kudos to you. I mean, that's what I'm talking about.
Thank you. But I went back to take my state exam right before the deadline, because you can, once you take the class, you need to take your state exam within 2 years. And I looked up. I was like, oh my gosh, my 2 years is almost up. So I went to take the state exam, and I got my license. And then I said, you know what? I'm going to see what this does for me. And I'm gonna see if I can help somebody else avoid what I went through.
Obviously everything happens for a reason, and not that there's any sense in ever looking back on your life and saying, what would I do differently, right? That you don't dwell on those things. But if you saw someone else going through something similar, right, and you could push them, and obviously they can always hire you, and then that's all solved, right? But as far as that kind of life advice where you don't know what you don't know, and you're so excited, and you have this dream, and you just that's all you kind of see, right? And you're not stopping to think about, without deflating that dream or not, you know, killing the excitement for it, how do you just set yourself up to know that to ask the right questions in any situation, right? Whether it's home buying, whether it's whatever. But, yeah. You know, people just rush into things sometimes without just taking a step back and looking, because they feel whatever, like they're going to miss out, or, you know, they're going to lose an opportunity.
So I would just say, like you said, just ask questions. I'm not telling you do not do it. Just ask the right questions. And I do tell them, whether you use me or not, these are some of the things that you need to know, right? When they are working with me, however, it is every single step of the process. We are fully dissecting it. This is what's going on. This is what this means. These are the next steps once we get past this. And then when we get to the next step, then it's, remember we talked about this? Well, let's talk about it a little bit more, you know. So that's one of the things. The next thing, it also goes back to our responsibility as a professional. We should be educating anyway. This is our industry. Some people will not educate because they're not getting paid. Well, if you put out the education, the money is going to come. And that's what I tell my agents. When you educate, the money is going to come. So when you put that first, again, putting a person first, it's going to come. And if it goes to someone else, again, just have the gratification that either you told them, they made their own choice so you could sleep at night, or if they did go to someone else, that at least they got what they needed, you know, or they come to you and now you've changed another person's life, you know. So that's what I would just tell them. Just like you said, just ask the questions. It doesn't hurt. And if a person cannot answer it, that's okay. What's not okay is if they shut it down, if they deflect, or if they get defensive about it. But if a person says, I don't know, but let me find out, that's the person you want to be with. Or when you see the people that, and I'm this is kind of a small pivot to even to new agents. When you align yourself with the proper team, you let them know, I have a team of experience that I'm learning from, and this is why I chose this team. So although I've only been licensed for 6 months, my experience is 28 years. So you are going to be taken care of with that in mind, not the 6 months.
And great advice, first of all. And it seems just how, you know, how we were talking earlier, you never set out to have your own brokerage. It wasn't like you wanted a team. It wasn't like you had these things in mind, but because of the way you show up for people, because of how you genuinely care, and not just for your clients, but for others in the industry as well, and wanting to, you know, provide help and be a resource to other agents, that they started coming to you and they feel comfortable to come to you, right? And you've built such a great name and reputation for yourself, not just, like I said, with your clients, but amongst your own industry and community. Now that you're here and you've gone through so much, and I'm sure not just professionally, but personally, you know, overcoming, there's this part now, the way that you see, and it's not just marketing yourself, right? That's one aspect of it, but it's really for you sharing your story and being more vulnerable in that aspect of it, right? What has brought you to that point where this is something that you feel important to not only, you know, share and have as a strategy for that, but also to really connect with people, right? And it seems like that's really what you wanted to do. You know, kind of take me to that point in your life now of where you are, where you're going, and, you know, how this has all just kind of come together to the point where you see this, like we talked about earlier, not a new chapter in your life, but like a new book, right?
Yeah. Wow. So that's a loaded question. So let me unpack it here. Where that first started for me definitely was therapy. And it was a combination. of therapy and strengthening my relationship with Christ.
Amen.
Once I started working on my relationship with him, I was asking myself, I felt like I was in a kind of like a gray area. It wasn't necessarily a low area, because some people think that you have to be low to start to seek that. I was not in a low area at all. I was definitely in what I would call a happy place. But I felt a little strange, a little odd, like I need more, or I feel like I'm supposed to be doing more, but I don't understand what that more is supposed to be. And I was asking, like, what am I supposed to be doing? What is this? You know, and I kept hearing, read the word, you know, read the word. Okay. And then I would go to church, and even the pastor would say, read the word. I just kept getting confirmation, right? Mm-hmm. So I challenged myself to go back to the Bible and start from book one. And wow. I said, you know what? Because I do love to read anyway. So how about instead of listening to other people tell me about the different, you know, scriptures, learn them for myself. And I started reading the word. And as soon as I started reading it, as everybody know, I know it's popular, but it resonated with me in a way that I didn't expect, was the story of Joseph. And it was like, oh my gosh, it answered so many questions for me that I had over years of my life that I didn't even understand I was really asking myself that. I would ask it here or there when certain situations happen. But that question kept coming back. If a different situation happened, I kept going back to the same question. So when I read that story, it was like, whoa. And I got so excited. And it made me want to read the Bible even more. What other answers does this book have for me? Then I entered therapy. And when I got into therapy, my therapist said, in actually our first session, it's like, it's very interesting that you're here and I'm glad that you are, but you seem real self-aware. So exactly, like, I'm trying to get, like, you know, the best way to help you. So
she's,
you know,
like, what are you doing here?
She's like, and I'm like, and who sent you? Yeah, you know? Yeah. And I said, well, I do feel a little liberated, you know, because I've been reading the Bible and I'm getting excited and I'm telling her about this. And she's like, I think you need to tell more people your story. And I was like, oh, no, that's not why I'm here. I don't want to do that. I just want this healing for me.
Was that pretty quick or immediate into the therapy that was like what was recommended?
Yes.
Wow.
And it was because it was toward the end of our first session. And she's like, you seem like so, like, most people come to me and we need to unpack a couple of sessions before we get to this point.
Yeah.
It's like, we got right to the point with you. So, and when I started telling her about, you know, me getting closer to God and the conversation that we had leading up to that point, she said, okay, I think what actually needs to happen is that you need to tell more people your story. And I'm like, oh, no, that's not why I'm here. And she's like, it may not be why you're here, but I think that that will actually help in your healing process. And I think that it's very important because you don't know how many other people need to hear your story. You don't know how many other lives that you could save. Everybody isn't as resilient as you are. And if you let me, I want to help you prepare to tell your story. And I said, challenge accepted. This was January of last year. So It wasn't a quick and simple process. And to be quite honest, Tony, this is the first time I'm even saying as much as I am right here today.
That's beautiful.
So that's brought me to where I am. And as far as where I'm going. I'm going in a direction to not only help people domestically, but I want to help people globally. In going on this self-healing journey for myself, I think that as far as my brokerage, it'll always be here. That's my baby. Sweet 527 is my birthday. It's 527. That's where the green, because that's emerald green, is my birthstone.
That was my parents' wedding anniversary.
See? So yeah, it's that lucky day, right? And so that's never going anywhere. That's definitely my baby. So we're good there. But as far as the brokerage, I'll be more in a managerial role. And just helping my agents, you know, further their real estate career. We've added an international division, and because I am now going global and I'm looking to help people expand this investment real estate or retire in an entirely different country or continent. And I'm learning about different cultures, and it's also just really opening my eyes to just another part of the world. I feel like a brand new kid. So just like you said, it's not like I feel like I'm writing another chapter. I feel like I'm starting a new book of my life. And I just think this is perfect time, and I'm right where I'm supposed to be.
Thank you for sharing that. That's a lot. You're right. A lot to dissect there. And one of the things, in speaking of the Bible and leaning into it, you know, and I think more recently I'd heard this, but that Jesus said how it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to get into heaven, right? But it's this idea, and you know, it's so hard to understand, like camel through the eye of a needle, thinking, but the eye of a needle was actually the smallest door in the doors into the city gates or city, you know, limits, where when they didn't have these big doors open, the camels couldn't get through if they were full of stuff, yes, right? And so the eye of the needle was just big enough for a man, but you know, a human, but that in order for the camel to get through, he had to like become very small, but had to unpack everything, right?
Yes.
And I thought that's so profound, because that's the only way to get into heaven, and that's what you have to do, is you don't take anything with you, right? So you have to leave it all. But that was part of your message too. And what I want, last thing, you know, to leave the audience with, is that you said you really have to unpack everything, that you can't hold on. And as you are now heading into this new direction, and like you said, it's in order for this new book to begin, not this next chapter, but this new book, that the old, you know, that the old book, but the last book had to end, right? And so here you are, really taking me through what that means for you to unpack before you can take off in this new direction, that you can't hold on to these things from the past.
So it definitely takes, it's courage. It takes strength. It takes healing. And you do have to start that with yourself. Those steps that I hear about of AA is any addiction. And holding on to regret, holding on to depression, holding on to wanting to, the sense of, I guess, revenge is what I'm looking for. That's an addiction, because you're trying to feed that and you're trying to get that in any way possible that you can, right? You have to kick that addiction, right? And then once you do, you have to make amends, right? And when you make amends, it's okay to make amends with yourself. It's not selfish. You know, sometimes we are angry with ourselves, and we think we're angry with other people, but we're angry with ourselves because we're asking ourselves, why did I allow this to happen to me? Why wasn't I thinking? Was I stupid? No. You know, my life was built off experiences. I would not have learned what I learned without the experience that I went through. Do I regret any of it? Absolutely not. Even as people are like, oh my gosh, you went through that. Don't feel sorry for me, because look at where I am now. I would not be here without those experiences. And so I don't regret any of them. I'm just glad that I learned from them and I didn't let it take me out. And for that, I can't have resentment with myself for going through that. I have to pat myself on the back that I'm still standing, right? And then you have to reach back. Now that you knew no, how about you make sure you help a person learn from your experience as well, instead of continuing to repeat the cycle? Because a lot of us do go through repeated cycles because we are afraid to talk about it. We don't want to share that story. But we don't know how our story will prevent the next person from going through what we went through. Now, will they still have to go through their own experience and learn from them? Yes. But think of how much further ahead they will be by the time they get to their experiences, because they don't have to start at square one with the same mistakes we made as we were coming up.
Absolutely. No. Amazing advice. Amazing story. Amazing woman. Thank you so much, Sherry, for coming in, sharing, and being so vulnerable, you know, giving us the, you know, the first to share your story, at least this part of it, right?
Yeah.
So excited for everything that's to come. But, you know, thank you again for being here and for being a part of our community.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.